Earth sky.
Hello, welcome to Earth Sky 22, your weekly mix of science and music from Austin, Texas. I'm Michael Brennan. This week, we're talking with a paleontologist about dinosaur tracks in Australia and how his new research has turned the long-accepted story of the tracks on its head. We'll also be hearing a brand new song from Phosphorescent off his upcoming release and talking to Deborah Bird about this week's full moon. Here's your scientist soundbite.
I want to learn more about how dinosaurs move. Because when you see documentaries and movies where you have dinosaurs animated, much of that depends on artistic license to show how they move. But by examining footprints, we can put some scientific credibility to how the foot moves, probably how the leg moves, and then how the entire body moves.
That's paleontologist Anthony Ramilio talking about his study of the thousands of dinosaur tracks in Lark Quarry Conservation Park in Australia. More with him in a few, but first, Emily Howard and I are going to run through science news of the week.
On January 22nd, a new company called Deep Space Industries Incorporated became the second company in less than a year to join what is being called the New Asteroid Gold Rush. Scientists have known for decades that there are rich fields of water and precious metals available in near-Earth asteroids. Now, for the first time, companies are seriously queuing up to be among the first to gather those resources. Deep Space Industries said in a formal announcement on January 22nd at the Santa Monica Museum of Flying in California that it will build the world's first fleet of commercial asteroid prospecting spacecraft. It has named its first class of spacecraft Firefly.
Scientists have successfully stored an audio recording of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech and Shakespearean sonnets on a strand of synthetic DNA. They were able to translate, store, and retrieve this data. This strand of DNA is much like the DNA contained in each cell of every living organism. Furthermore, these scientists claim that it may be possible to store a billion books worth of data for thousands of years in a single small test tube.
Researchers studied 152 Vietnam veterans with combat-related brain injuries to create the first detailed map of the brain regions that contribute to what's called emotional intelligence, the ability to process emotional information and navigate the social world. The study found that there's significant overlap between general intelligence and emotional intelligence, both in terms of behavior and where it happens in the brain. The study appears in the journal Social Cognitive and Affective Neuroscience.
A new study links lightning to headaches. The study was published in the January 24th online edition of the journal Cephalalgia. The study found that there was 31% increased risk of headache and 28% increased risk of migraine for chronic headache sufferers on days lightning struck within 25 miles of study participants' homes. That's Science News of the Week. Song of the Week is from Phosphorescent. It's off his upcoming release, Muchacho. It's set to be released this March. This song is called Song for Zula.
I said, come on in. I
I will not open myself up this way again. And I lay my face to the sword, and gnaw my teeth to the sand. I will not lay like this for days now upon end. You will not see me fall, nor see me struggle to stand. To be acknowledged by some touch from his gnarled hands. You see the caged call, I said, come on in. I will not open myself up this way again. I see the shadows that we cast in the cold, clean light. Ah, my feet are gold, and my heart is white. And we race out on the desert plains all night. See, honey, I am not some broken thing. I do not lay here in the dark. Burning thing, let it make the fire ring. All that I know, love as a Cajun thing, just a killer come to call from some awful dream. Oh, and all you folks, you come to see, you just stand there in the glass looking at me. But my heart is wild, and my bones are steel, and I could kill you with my bare hands if I was free.
Was Song for Zula by Phosphorescent. You're listening to Earth Sky 22. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Anthony Ramilio of the University of Queensland led a study of fossilized tracks at the Dinosaur Stampede National Monument at Lark Quarry Conservation Park in Australia. He said the study suggests that the tracks were made by swimming, not running, dinosaurs. He published his research in the January issue of the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. I caught up with them this week by Skype. So tell us about the Lark Quarry dino tracks.
Yeah, well, for over 30 years, these this magnificent site in central western Queensland where excavated is more than 3,000 individual footprints, has been interpreted as being the only site in the world that represents a dinosaur stampede. And the research that we've recently published in the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology sort of, you know, turns that on its head. And we've found that many of the small dinosaurs that were apparently part of this stampede were in fact swimming. So it certainly has shaken up the original story a little bit.
So the original story, they thought it was about 180 dinosaurs that were grazing, and a large carnivorous dinosaur came along and scared them, and they all stampeded and left these tracks. What was the reason that they thought this? Did they do any in-depth research, or was the story?
The research originally done in the 1970s, 1980s, saw this trackway that had very large footprints. You know, these are over, say 0.6 of a metre long.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the conversion with inches.
That'd be about 2 feet, I think.
2 feet, yes. Yeah. So we have footprints that are about 2 feet long. And the small dinosaur tracks seem to be all heading in the one direction and taking very large steps mm-hmm. to go in that direction. And because of the uniformity of where they're going, and it seemed like these animals were running, the idea was, hey, they're probably stampeding. And they pointed the finger at this culprit, the very large meat-eating dinosaur, as causing the stampede. A couple of years ago, we re-examined those footprints of the big dinosaur, and our research supported the idea that many other scientists have thought, was that it's more likely to be a plant-eating dinosaur. The trackway that this big dinosaur had, it indicated that its legs were crisscrossing, so crossing over every now and then. So definitely not an animal that was sort of racing, but more like something that's ambling along. And the environment at the time was believed to have been on the edge of a lake. Our research suggests that it's actually a river system. And with our research as well, it indicated that the little footprints weren't made by two different types of dinosaurs, not a small meat eater and small plant eater. They are, in fact, just one type of dinosaur, a small plant-eating dinosaur. And the reason why the original researchers had thought it was two types of dinosaurs is you get these footprints that have very short toe impressions and others that have very long toe impressions. And by us studying the tracks in 3D, we found that the long-toed tracks were actually made by the short-toed individuals dragging their toes along. So at La Quarry, originally thought to be a big meat-eater, a small meat-eater, and small plant-eating dinosaurs there, our research says that, no, it's more likely that they're only plant-eating dinosaurs at that particular site. And we also found traces of scratch marks, so where the animals, you know, probably couldn't even support their own weight. And if you imagine, you know, a dog that's swimming along a river and just able to touch the bottom of the river, they're the kind of scratch marks that we find at the site as well. And that indicates that the animals were buoyed in some way. We also find other types of swim traces where it indicates the animals were just tippy-toeing like a prima ballerina across the site. And we're suggesting as well that the only way that they could have made those tracks, if again, they were buoyed by water in some way, so the water was supporting their weight, and they were able to just touch the tips of their toes as the water sort of propels them down the river.
You had mentioned something about 3D. Can you talk to us just briefly about the science that you used? Was there carbon dating and 3D modeling? What sort of science did you use to in your research?
Yeah, like for this, it really basic kind of stuff. You know, it's there are techniques where you can do laser scanning of sites, and that's been done before. Other people sort of chop fossil footprints up so they can see the structure underneath, so the deformation of the sediment to understand about movement. You know, I took a very simple approach because this is a World Heritage site. You know, I'm not allowed to, you know, chop up these precious footprints. So one of the techniques I used is a tool that's used in carpentry called a contour guide. And it's used, it's just like a series of pins that are in a line. You press it into a particular shape and they're able to trace the outline. What I did with that contour guide was press these tools into the footprints to see the profile, the depth profile of these tracks. The 3D animation that we did, though, was based on photographs. So you take many photographs at different angles of a single footprint. There's free software over the internet where you can put in these photographs and it can create a 3D model for you, which is quite fabulous.
Well, great. Is the Stampede National Monument going to have to change its name?
It's a good question, and I'm sure people are scratching their heads, you know. Yeah, so it's not for me to change the name. Okay. I think it might even be, a contentious issue to change it.
Okay, fair enough. So any further research that you're doing right now?
Yeah, look, the research that we're doing at the moment on dinosaur footprints is another site in West Australia, above a town called Broome. It's in the tropics. And what we're finding at the moment is an amazing array of dinosaur diversity. And it appears, you know, at this stage that it is potentially the most diverse dinosaur track site in the world. So we're quite delighted about that. And we're hoping that the research can be publicised.
Yeah, we'll have to follow up with you on that.
In the next couple of months. Yeah, please do.
That was Anthony Ramilio talking about his new research published in the January issue of the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. You're listening to EarthSky 22. You can find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird is here to talk about the moon phases and this week's full moon. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Mike. The full moon for January 2013. It's happening on January 26th. And you were asking me earlier about why we've been seeing the moon so early in the day recently.
Yeah, I was out running. I saw it at like 3 in the afternoon or 2 in the afternoon or something like that.
Yeah. And so for this whole past week, the moon, of course, has been waxing and shifting farther and farther over into the eastern sky in the late day, like around the time you were running. So what happens is every month, the moon is waxing toward full. It's getting bigger and bigger in the sky, and people start to notice it in the days before full moon in a blue daytime sky, mm-hmm. because then it's pretty far from the sun. I mean, think about where the sun is. When you were running at 3 in the afternoon, the sun was probably toward the western sky. The moon was just coming up mm-hmm. in the eastern sky, so it was pretty far from the sun on the sky's dome, and also fairly large in phase heading toward that full moon on January 26th.
Yeah, so the full moon January 26th, can we talk about why the moon is reaching its full phase every month?
Yeah, so what happens is that the moon is going around Earth, of course, but to understand why the moon goes through its phases, you have to think about the moon as a world in space, just like Earth is a world in space. So just like the Earth, the moon has a day side and a night side. And as the moon is traveling around the Earth, we're seeing varying fractions of the moon's day side. So we're seeing different phases of the moon for that reason. So what happens at full moon is that we're sitting here on the Earth. We're seeing the moon opposite the sun. The sun is on one side of us. The moon is on the other side of us. So the moon's fully lighted hemisphere, its day side, is facing us completely, and that's a full moon. And that's why we see the moon, as I said you know, as it gets closer and closer to full moon, you see the moon farther and farther from the sun in the sky, because at full moon, there's this 180 degree difference between the sun and moon. They're exactly opposite. The moon is coming up in the east as the sun is going down in the west. It's fully lighted hemisphere. Its day side is facing us, and that's why we see the full moon.
Cool. Okay, so anything else to see in the sky this week?
Well, be sure to look for the moon near the bright star Regulus on the nights of the 27th and 28th. And again, you're going to have to look a little bit later at night because the moon is coming up a little later at night.
Okay.
So Regulus is the brightest star in the constellation Leo the Lion. So look for the moon near Regulus 27th and 28th. After that, the moon's going to be waning in phase, rising later at night. It'll be rising at 10 o'clock, then 11, then midnight, then 1 a.m., 3 a.m. Pretty soon the moon's shifting over into the pre-dawn sky, and we won't see it at all at night. We'll only see it before dawn. So around early February, we'll start seeing the moon in the pre-dawn sky, and the moon will be sweeping past the planet Saturn on February 3rd.
Okay, so get your moon watching in now while you can.
That's right, and mark your calendar for 27th and 28th, moon near Regulus, February 3rd, moon near Saturn.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Deborah.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to our musical contributors: Phosphorescent, The Black and White Years, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and Echocentrics. To take you out this week, Don Alejo from the Echocentrics Sun Shadows album. Until next week, be good to one another. I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.